You're listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental.
How are you feeling after that, Matt?
I feel a lot better than Bob.
Extra Time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
You guys are the experts. You'll probably have to analyze that.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from Kansas City, Missouri, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental. From my basement, I'm Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, David Goss, Matt Doyle. Welcome back to YouTube, folks. We were not there on Monday. We never informed you of that, and that was a mistake, as our mentions on Twitter were filled with, hey, where's the friggin' video? And it wasn't there. So if you want to watch it on YouTube and you thought maybe we were done with that, we are not. We are back. Big show today. Greg Vanney is going to join us. We're going to talk about the coaching carousel, which now has one additional open seat because Diego Alonso should have just trusted his gut and known that his job was, in fact, not his job. As it turns out, they have parted ways by mutual consent, which I thought is what they did before, but turns out they did it now. I don't know. We have a lot to talk about. Free agency, player signings, the U.S. national team. That sort of thing, but I think we have to start in one place, and that is what is on the mind, I'm sure, of all of us. Every waking minute of the day right now, our democracy is under attack. I don't think there's any other way to put that. One of the things about this soccer community and this show that I've been most proud of over the years, to be a part of it, to have an opportunity to speak to people that I don't know or do know twice a week, is that we have not shied away from what matters most, which is life, the pursuit of freedom, of happiness, of our rights. And right now, the images coming out of Washington, D.C., and particularly the images on Wednesday, are terrifying. They're disturbing. There was a riotous mob invading our Capitol building, trying to, and failing at, I should add, to disrupt the transfer of legal and free elections and the transfer of power. And they were incited by our president. And that is both, as I said, horrifying and depressing. So just know, as we talk about what we love and what entertains us and what provides a diversion from all the things in life that can be scary, and that is soccer, that we are thinking about that. And I know I am thinking about that. I guess I can't speak for both of you in saying we, but I know I am thinking about that through every second of this show. So that's where we stand. We hope you're doing okay. We hope you're dealing with it well. Talk to your friends, talk to your family, take a break if you need to, and I hope that this will be a break for you. I don't have anything else to say. I think I was rambling a little bit there, and I think it's time
you spoke,
to...
You spoke well for us, and I think that, as you said, it's time to let's be a little bit of a distraction and get the people some of our brand of insanity rather than the horrid, chilling type of insanity that we saw in Washington, D.C. on Wednesday.
And wouldn't you know, that brand of insanity is basically obsessing about every nook and cranny of Major League Soccer. And a new bit. Bobby's gone, so we can do bits. Producing Anders' reminder for the day is that we leave time for the mailbag. So set those stopwatches. After we go through everything else, we will give it at least 5 minutes. That is my promise to Producing Anders, and that is my promise to the listeners out there. And actually, we'll just start with some mail. Because we asked for New Year's resolutions for the show, and you delivered, of course. Marcus Aurelius Ritus, which is a hell of a Twitter handle there, says, put your money where your mouth is. A homegrown fantasy league has to happen on Extra Time, and I could not agree more. Get your whiteboards out right now. It's time to brainstorm. It's time to figure out how we do this. We won't do it in this moment, but we will try to at least begin the conversation to set the rules for the inaugural hashtag PlayYourKidsDraft. My suggestion off the top, it has to be a keeper league, and transfer fees have to be involved. So if you picked up Mark McKenzie like 3 years ago and you waited on it, maybe you didn't get that many points off the jump, and then last year was a big year for you, but then you got a $6 million transfer to Genk, you should just be dunking on everybody. So I think it should be a keeper league. I think it should be five players per season, given that it is a keeper league and it should accumulate over time. And there should be some balance between week to week points, whether that be for performances or team performance, whether it's attacking or defending or midfield or goalkeeper or whatever. And then there should be a big bonanza at the end for transfer money. How do we do this? How should we do this? Does this pique your interest the way it piques mine? Go. I said go.
so much. Yeah, it definitely piques my interest. I think you got to break down position a little, even if it's five. I don't think you can require a goalkeeper. Teams just don't play homegrown MLS goalkeepers that much. Outside of that, though, I'd say you have to have a split defender midfield attack. How do you calculate the money into, like, is that its own cat? Is it like a category thing where it's like who had most shots on their team, who generated the most transfer fee?
I think that this is probably a mini year accumulation of points. I don't think that this, it's like, you know, you might win at the end of 2021, you might win 2021, but you know that in the, you know, it's, there's a long-term game to be played here, and it's an ever-evolving table. That's my opinion. It never goes back to zero. You're always trying to build on because it is a keeper league. The other thing I would say is that there has to be an age limit. You can't go drafting Bill Hamid. You can't go drafting like
homegrown Jason. Maybe. I don't know if you've heard.
Yeah, well, you can't go drafting Jordan Morris. You know what I mean? And be like, oh, well, he's part of my inaugural keeper draft. Like, it doesn't count anymore. If it's the player kids draft, in my opinion, they have to be 22 under 22 eligible to be drafted. Doyle, anything
but then
here?
How do you keep them? What if a guy on your team?
You have them forever. You have them forever, but you have to have had faith in them when they were quote unquote kids.
Got it.
I'm just saying.
Now you guys have a good flow. You guys keep talking about it. This doesn't interest
me. Levy's just trying to find a way to get his Brian Reynolds mistake to like pay out for him in the end by doing this. If you pick him when he's 15, he's my guy. That's
hey,
my
man,
keeper.
Doesn't matter if you make the draft pick accidentally. If you make that draft pick, you get all the credit going forward. It pains me. It hurts me, Doyle, that you're not as interested and intrigued by this as I am. Like
it just seems like another spreadsheet to keep track of.
Boom.
That's a lot, man.
That's what producing Anders is here for. Yeah.
So Anders is going to keep track of everything?
He says exactly. In the chat right now, he said exactly. He is committing. That is a contractual commitment to maintain the spreadsheet forever.
For each draft pick, we should be required to do a sketch of the person. So he's acknowledging who he thinks it is, their identification, and their name. Weeby can't just say a name, because then we're going to end up with 6 weeks later, Weeby's like, no, I picked that guy. I'm sure I picked that guy. So that's the only thing I'm throwing out.
Hey, we set the rules. If you want to make that a rule, that's fine. I'm down to parlay here. We'll figure it out. If you have a recommendation here, 401-206-0MLS. I had the phone number exactly right there. ExtraTime@MLSsoccer.com. Look, whoever would have taken Mark McKenzie, as I said, or maybe Brendan Aaronson, that would have been big time for them if this existed in years past. The deal is official with Genk for Mark McKenzie, as first reported by Jonathan Tannenwald, the goalkeeper on Twitter, as my brain always thinks of him. Tom Boger has some additional details here. Tommy Scoops at MLSsoccer.com. The Union are going to receive a fee in the region of $6 million, according to Tom Boger. There's a sell-on percentage and add-ons as well from Genk. This is big. I think it went official this morning. So it is done, done. What do you make of this, Doyle, for Mark McKenzie first? And then we'll talk about the trickle-down for the Union.
Well, Genk is a launching pad. If you look at the types of players that they've put into some of the biggest clubs in the world and the biggest leagues in the world, this is, I mean, it's almost like they are the exact type of team that the Union are aspiring to be. They are, you know, kind of in the same mold as RB Salzburg, which is where Brendan Aaronson went. So it makes a lot of sense from both the Union's model of what they're trying to get to as a talent-producing juggernaut, and it makes sense for Mark McKenzie because Genk are really incentivized to play their young players. And he is, I think, their third largest transfer outlay ever, which tells you what they think of him. They think he's really, really good. And on top of that, they play a 3-4-3. They play with three center backs. So there is kind of extra room in there for McKenzie to start earning minutes probably right. It just checks every box. Belgium is a good league. It's scouted heavily. It is very much a stepping stone, but it is a sensible stepping stone in a real way. I like these types of transfers more than I like seeing a player go to like a low-end Premier League team. Because the low end of the Premier League, you're not playing soccer. You're just trying to survive. You're just trying to stay up and not get relegated. And that takes a certain type of skill set. And I do hope that it's one that Mark McKenzie eventually develops, because I think that as a ball playing center back, he's better at the ball playing part than the center back part. But going to Genk, he will get to hone that ball playing part even more. And that will put him on, I think, in terms of his talent, that will put him on the radars of the teams in the top half of the Premier League, or Serie A, or La Liga, or the Bundesliga, so that when he does eventually move to a top five league, really a top four league, I think, and that move is, you know, as long as he stays healthy, that type of move is inevitable. He's not going to have to go to a team that bunkers in and kicks it long and just tries to survive. He's going to be able to go to a team that plays real soccer. So I like every box, just check, 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 check. Good business by the Union. A really good career step for the kid himself. And I'm excited to see whether or not he hits the ground running. I suspect that he will.
Yeah, it's exciting. To Doyle's point, Genk are second in the league right now. So they play to win. They've been competitive. I think they're pretty deep in the cup. So you've got that on top of these sales. Atalanta has been a really strong connection for them over the last few years. Napoli, Bayer Leverkusen. So these are the type of clubs you're talking about in 2 years that McKenzie could be going to. And to what Doyle said, this is a club that's built on that in Genk. So there's no like, well, he's actually good for us, we're competitive. No, they want him out the door for as much as they can get.
Yep.
Right after this. And so that's the point of what's happening. They also brought in a Colombian center back this window as well, for I think their second highest or third highest outlay ever. So this is a club that
they also have. They already have three Colombian center backs on their roster as well. I think all three of their starters are Colombian center backs. And like two of those are reported to be like massive transfer targets for the likes of Napoli and Atalanta. Sorry, I stepped on you right there.
No. So that's what this club's built for. And so that's the opportunity that McKenzie's going to get. And so it's, if I guess the one reaction you'd see from some fans is, oh, I want to see him in that big league. I want to see him for a team I know. This is the best place for him to go to
get there eventually.
Yeah,
he'll get there eventually.
And if you're talking about guys that are in his position or playing around him that are being scouted at the level that they are, that is only good for Mark McKenzie, both from a competition standpoint, but also from a scouting standpoint. Like, you hear all the time, hey, I was watching this guy, but it's this one that I want. You want eyes on you. You want to be put in an opportunity to be successful. The thing about Mark, and it's one of my favorite interviews that we've done in a long, long time, was that you just knew from talking to him that he wasn't going to jump at sort of the first flashy thing. It wasn't going to be like, oh, Celtic's in? Bam, I'm gone. Try to force the deal. Has to happen now. I'm impatient. It needs to be now, now, now. You could tell from the way he had talked about it, and also by the way the Union have talked about it and done their business here, you know, RB Leipzig and Brendan Aaronson's another good example, that they're thinking in a more long-term way, not only in the sell-on percentage, but in the perception for future players, because you want to have the guys that keep making the jumps so that people keep coming back to your well because they know that the potential is there. And also, by the way, the incoming money is going to be there for them when they sell the player. So I think all around, it's just been a banner year for the Union. I mean, everything that they wanted to be in 2020 and now into the first part of 2021, they are. A team that wins their first trophy, that wins a supporters' shield, has sustained excellence at the first team level, doing it with their kids, but also with veteran players and TAM players and players from around the world, and then selling for the most money ever two homegrowns in Aaronson and McKenzie. I mean, if you're Sugarman, if you're Richie Graham, if you're Jim Curtin, if you're certainly Ernst Tanner, who was brought in to do this exact thing, you have to right now sit back and just like revel in it just a little bit. But also know that it's going to be, you know, the next steps are just as hard, right? Like, you don't just churn out Brendan Aaronsons and Mark McKenzie's every single year without doing something right. You got to keep doing those things right to keep being the team you want to be.
I got to say, of that list of names you rattled off, I'm pretty sure the least psyched about it has got to be Jim Curtin.
He just
best 11 players. He might lose Kai Wagner too, because there's a lot of interest in him. Bottom tier of the Bundesliga or top tier of the two Bundesliga. This is going to be like, he's probably wondering like, okay, where's my DP number 10 to replace Brendan? Where's my, you know, TAM center back to replace Mark? But that's not the way the Union do it. It's gonna have, like, it really looks to me like it's gonna have to come from within. And it's like, this is yet another test for Jim Curtin, and it's gonna be very, very interesting to see how he approaches this one.
So can I my understanding was they signed Glesnes to be the replacement before Mark left. Mm-hmm. Is that, does that,
that rings out? Yeah, that rings true to me. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, they still have Glessness and Elliott, which I think is a really good.
Yeah. They think Elliott's an MLS starter and Glessness is a TAM guy.
Yeah. So I actually think Elliott is better than Glessness.
But, I agree. Yeah. But look, if I'm Jim Curtin, I actually, you know, yeah, do I lose two great players? Sure. But if I was Jim Curtin 2 years ago, I might be a little nervous. But Jim Curtin 2 years ago and Jim Curtin now, in terms of like job security and personal confidence and ambition, is a little bit different. If I'm the Jim Curtin now, I'm looking around saying, you know, after what he told us on this show that he does have aspirations to one day manage in Europe, I'm saying this was exactly what I wanted to happen ultimately for my long-term goals as it pertains to perhaps something outside the union and even within the union. Because if what they want is exactly this, and that's what I helped deliver as head coach and the developer of this talent, I mean, that's, you know, that's gold stars all around for me. So, but now the challenge is very real. You know, you were supporters Shield winners last year. We said on our resolution show, be ready for perhaps a drop off. Well, now Jim Curtin's new challenge, which hasn't been there before, is what do you do to follow up that historic season without two of the players that fueled it? How do you bring more of those players through from your academy? And he has a special relationship from that academy through the first team, which we know. So congratulations to Mark McKenzie, first of all, and congratulations to the Philadelphia Union. You absolutely love to see it. I do have to mention the Brian Reynolds thing, even though you guys were trolling me on it a little bit. Is it Juve? Is it Roma? Is it Club Bruges? What will happen? We don't know, but it seems that it will happen. It's just a matter of time in this window. We will hold off on really digging into this one until it actually happens. Because without specifics, it's hard to have really an informed conversation. So keep your eyes on Brian Reynolds and FC Dallas. Don't got to keep your eyes on Kevin Molino anymore. He is a Columbus Crew player. I'm backing up.
No, Andrew,
and actually, you should back up. Beep, beep, beep. Back up over me.
He needs to be in Minnesota. It's where he plays his best soccer. It's where he's happy. Kevin Molino is going to do everything in his power to play for Minnesota. Right, Andrew? That's what you told him.
Well, look, I don't know, 3 weeks ago, I basically begged him to stay. But what I didn't really think at that time was that a team coming off a championship with the level of investment that they had made in a lot of places on the team over the last year and a half in the Columbus Crew would have the space to go get Kevin Molino. I did not really think that that would be possible, honestly, because it has to be a TAM deal. I mean, I think it was reported that he's now going to make basically what is the maximum that he could make as a free agent. That's from The Athletic.
Max was set because it keeps you under the going over. So it's 650 or whatever that number is, which keeps you under that TAM deal. I think the point was Columbus has the safety. Is that my Alexa?
Yes. Alexa's very interested in Kevin Molino's free agent signing with Columbus. What's Alexa saying?
Hang on one sec.
Yeah. We'll continue this conversation. I'm jacked for Hot Boy. This is awesome.
The robot revolution.
Alexa, time out. Has Alexa subscribed yet, or is she just listening for free, not padding our stats at all?
Alexa's really been having a struggle over the last few days, and I'm pretty sure they've started to tap me because they know what I know and everyone knows what I know, which is this. Columbus Crew is one of the few teams that has the luxury to give Kevin Molino guaranteed years because they can take that risk, because without him, they're an MLS Cup winning team. It's the same roster that just won for them. So if he's not starting on the wing, it's an MLS Cup goal scorer in Derek Etienne or a former young DP in Luis Diaz or Pedro Santos, or they can slide him inside, whatever. So they have the luxury to go and do this. And what's awesome for Columbus is they can win MLS Cup without him, but if they have him, they can win CCL. And that's the difference for this team. It's the same with BWP. Their ceiling is already high. Their floor is super high. Now you're able to go out and get these luxury pieces to take you to another level. And that's why this move's awesome. And it seemed like Kevin Molino was kind of ready for something new, which hopefully, fingers crossed, he's healthy and it works out for him.
How do they use him, Doyle? Because it is a little crowded in there with Diaz and with Santos and with Zelarayan. It feels like there are set starters because that's an MLS Cup winning team. So if you're Kevin Molino, who in Minnesota, and this is partially why I said stay, would have been like this shining, guiding light, you're kind of now part of the Crew.
Mm-hmm.
No pun intended.
Jeez, that was rough.
I actually didn't mean to do that.
Yeah, he's healthy and he's playing anything like he did last year during the stretch run and into the playoffs, then he's the starter no disrespect to Derek Etienne or Santos or Luis Diaz, all of whom have proven to be really good players for winning teams. Kevin Molino's better than any of them. But this gives Caleb Porter now the flexibility to rotate and to keep guys fresh, to be sort of like matchup dependent. Could also slide either Santos or Molino inside a little bit and play as a number 10 to rest Zeller Ryan. Different style number 10, obviously, but you play a little bit more counterattacking, a little more linear with those two guys. It's a great signing from Columbus. And I just want to point out, that, as you said, David, they got BWP, who was the league leader in goals and assists per 90 during the regular season. And they got Molino, who was, I believe, second overall in goals and assists per 90 during the postseason. That's a really, really good offseason from Tim Bezbachenko and Caleb Porter. And look, like, I kind of tossed this out maybe 6 months ago. What would you trade for Garth Lagerwey? What would you trade for Tim Bezbachenko? Because these two guys have their teams going deep into the playoffs every single year. They're able to refresh their rosters. They're able to get guys like Zeller Ryan or like Ladero, but then they're also able to go further down the budget list and add guys, you know, like a Kevin Molino or like a Joao Paulo. So this has been just a masterclass of an 18 months from Tim Bezbachenko. It's an MLS Cup winning roster that has only just gotten better. Which is spectacular if you're a Crew fan, and it's absolutely what they deserve as a fan base, given what they did in 2017 and 2018.
You also have to give some shine to Pat Onside, who I'm sure had some hand in this. And also I would say about Tim Bezbachenko, and obviously Garth Lagerwey has said this, Tim also has something which is the president tag. He is helping get a stadium built in Columbus. He is helping, as you said, sort of erase the memories and the scars that were there from that Save the Crew process. So yeah, this is huge. The Crew are nasty. I am so excited to see this go down. I still am a little heartbroken that I won't get Bebello and Kevin Molino together, but you know, not as heartbroken as Adrian Heath maybe should be. But.
Yeah. I was just gonna say, that's actually the more interesting aspect of this, because it's a no brainer for Columbus. Whereas with Minnesota, this has to be gut wrenching, because what Bebello and Molino were able to do during the playoffs was, damn near unprecedented. It just in terms of like chance after chance after chance. The guy was a match winner.
By the way, without a forward. So yeah. Now Kevin Molino goes and he's got Giassi and BWP sitting in front of him. He's probably just like, I'm about to go 15-15.
Yeah.
With his confidence levels, he's like 15-15, man.
So for Minnesota, we saw, I don't know, maybe Robin Lode goes back to that left side. Clearly it's not his best position. But we've seen his ceiling in MLS now, and it's been good, and Ethan Finley can probably, you know, you're going to win games with him as a starter. It sounds like they're going to try and get Luis Amaria back at center forward, but they probably need to make a DP signing. And the point was, Kevin Molino was playing like a DP but not paid one. Now you probably have to find a way to get Gregus down and get another DP in to help Abello. And if you don't, this is still a good team. And it's a team with a pretty high ceiling if they're on form or if Ike comes back and gets healthy. But the flip here is, and this is how MLS works, you had a steal in Molino when he was healthy. You lost him. Now you probably have to go out and spend for the production of Molino.
Yeah.
Yeah,
unless they can get it from Thomas Chacon. So.
Ooh, Chaconista.
Don't even get Minnesota. Don't even get Loon supporters started on that. All right. Yeah, don't get him started. Ears
definitely picked up at that.
Yes.
One.
Yes.
I think
by the way,
Chacon's going to have a decent season for Taro, but I'm unsure.
By the way, breaking news, bust out the Roger Espinoza jersey. My guy back in Kansas City where he belongs. Also, congratulations, Roger, on the engagement. We won't talk about that too much. We will, though, talk about Austin FC.
Did you move to Kansas City just so you could go to Roger's engagement party? And
I haven't got an invitation yet, but Roger, if you're listening,
I can promise you.
Well, I guess
your address. Don't say your address on the show, Weeby.
Oh, I'm not going to.
Weeby, I can promise you this. He's not listening.
Roger knows my address, okay? I texted it to him. I haven't yet, but I might.
Oh, boy.
Okay, let's talk about Austin FC, because they went and poached the captain, Matt Beisler, did his whole Matthew McConaughey voiceover video where he was, you know, people were probably like, did he like rent that massive truck for the occasion? No, Matt Beisler is very much a massive truck guy. He's headed to Austin. So is, shockingly still 25, Diego Fagundes.
Like, Diego Quinn is a free agent. Free agent means you have to play 5 years in MLS.
He's done that twice. He's done that twice. He was signed at 14 or 15. So I remember when he was signed.
I don't think he made his debut till 17 though.
Yeah, but he was signed. It doesn't matter. Like he was on contract.
Well, it's play, I think.
Really?
I don't know. Have to go back. Paul Venario will have to tell us. Sam can give you a rumor.
Yeah, Sam can like set the parameters, and Paul can really shut the door
Paul
on
be
it.
Exact.
All right, what do we think? Because this comes on the heels of another free agency, reentry draft, where Houston went and snatched Joe Corona from under Austin's nose, which was very interesting and pretty funny, in my opinion. Boniek Garcia is out of contract if Austin wants to return that and hit him in free agency. But Fagundes and Beisler to Austin FC, Doyle. Good signings?
Yeah, just for the record, Fagundes made his debut as a 16-year-old. Way back in 2011. Beisler.
I was probably at that game, by the way.
Sorry. I was definitely at some Red Bulls games where he scored a couple goals. And
that was my Revs days where I was working as a club ambassador for the New England Revolution.
Wow.
Take that.
Beisler has looked cooked to me over the past 2 years. But he's got a pedigree, he's got a sweet left foot. And then Julio Cascante particularly the new fellow, Romano, who I've only seen clips of, but he looks like a young, large, very athletic center back. And you could see that working next to, a veteran like Matt Beisler, who knows the league and, maybe has to be a little more conservative with his positioning. So it seems like a worthwhile flyer to take, given the makeup of the squad and given that, this could be for Beisler what Atlanta was for Michael Parkhurst, gave him those two or three extra years right at the tail end of his career. And he's a similar type of player in a lot of ways. So I understand that one and I like it. The Fagundes one has way more upside because he is only 25 and we have seen him play absolutely brilliant soccer throughout, in real small patches throughout his now decade-long MLS career. I think he's best, or should be best, as an inverted attacking winger. He hasn't played that spot very much over the past couple of years for New England. There are about a million other wingers on that roster already, so he's going to have his work cut out for him, and maybe they will, in fact, use him as more of an eight, which is where Bruce Arena used him the past couple of years, and where Joe Corona was supposed to play. So this is a chance for Fagundes to maybe nail down a larger role for a team that clearly has some ambition, but it's also very much a reclamation project. This is not Michael Parkhurst or Matt Beisler with two more years left and like, let's see if he can recapture some of the old magic and kind of boss the back line a little bit and organize things. This is like, okay, in 2 years, Diego Fagundes is going to be, not even 2 years, in 18 months, Diego Fagundes is still going to be a quality MLS player who gives real minutes to a good team, or Diego Fagundes going to be in USL? Because his trajectory over the past 3 years says he's going to be in the USL sooner or later.
We will see on Diego Fagundes. I will say
it's not even questionable, right?
Yeah, he didn't play much.
I don't know, because not being a starter, I think, is different than not being on an MLS roster.
He went from 30 starts in 2018 to 13 starts in 2019 to 9 starts in 2020.
Yeah,
his role progressively diminished as the team got better.
But a new guy took over and brought in two DPs who play his position, or three if you want to. So like part of that is on him, but part of that is on the situation, which I don't know that Austin will be much easier, but one of the things I like, and as Doyle went through it, is his flexibility. Because Austin still has two DP spots. You don't know when they're going to get done. It's a weird year, all that stuff. He can play in three or four different ways. Josh Wolf, in an interview yesterday, mentioned as a false nine as well. So in their mind, they're looking at a guy who's coming in and can play in a bunch of different positions so that they can have some flexibility to fill, whether it's time flexibility or positional flexibility around him, which I think is interesting. And it's exciting. He's only 25.
Yeah.
So like this is a stage.
It's a worthwhile flyer. He's younger than Wando was before Wando actually broke out and became an MLS regular. So like crazy stuff can happen in this league. And we all think that he has the talent to be a really, really good player in MLS. He hasn't shown that over the last couple of years.
It's a smart gamble. for an expansion team. Just to take that flyer and see what happens. I also think the Beasley thing is smart. It may not be necessarily that he is Michael Parkhurst in the sense that he is now sort of like, hey, this is the rock defensively for us. He sets the tone. He plays basically every game. He wins us an MLS Cup sort of expansion situation. But if you're looking at Cascante, who has never really caught hold in this league, and this new guy coming in, who better to have within the group if his expectations are not that I'm a 34-game guy to help guide that process along, to be a complimentary piece, to be like the brains that you can come to and say, tell me how to deal with this situation or tell me how to deal with this particular player. Matt Beisler is that sort of guy, and he is selfless in my opinion and my experience with him, and I think that you've seen that in Kansas City over time. That's a good guy to have on your expansion roster to help set a culture, but also to help the guys around him.
You also probably set yourself up still where you, if you wanted to, they could still probably get a TAM center back because of what you're spending on a free agent and what you bring in with Beisler, and he's a domestic.
Yeah, I mean,
it gives you even more flexibility, which I agree with you guys. You've got three center backs right now that you can rotate through. That's enough. But if they decide that, well, maybe he doesn't have the legs we thought he had, whatever it is, you still probably have roster flexibility to bring in a bigger guy over him if you need
to. And the coaching staff, Josh Wolf in Kansas City when he first came into the league, Davey Arnault, same deal. So there's a lot of familiarity between those guys. And look, if Guarani signs another good center back, you just go get him, right? So we'll see what happens with Austin, but looks like two good signings for them. This is predictable. Speaking of New England, AJ De La Garza from Inter Miami to New England in free agency to reunite with Bruce Arena. It just feels like a good signing for them. Again, a good flyer. If he's healthy, he can play a number of different positions. Bruce trusts him. He's not going to be the starter, but he can fill in.
If Tajon Buchanan is the starting right back for this team, an MLS team that needs a right back needs to go trade for Brandon Bhai. He's not a stud, but he's a starter in MLS, and that's an opportunity for another team.
All right, we'll see what happens there. Speaking of right backs, good transition there. Welcome. Apparently, Ivis Galarsep says that an Eastern Conference team is very interested in one DeAndre Yedlin, whose career at Newcastle has been revived in a lot of ways in recent weeks. What do we think? Is this real? Is this good agent planting to try to get a deal in the championship or perhaps a re-up with Newcastle? Who would afford DeAndre Yedlin? Would it be FC Cincinnati, who seem to be going to wingbacks and just got Ronald Matarrita? And if you had Yedlin on the right, good Lord, that would be fun. Yap Stam would probably be very happy about that. And oh, by the way, they're at the top of the allocation order, which matters when it comes to a guy like DeAndre Yedlin. Is Cincinnati a team that should go after him? Should any MLS team go after him? And what are the odds that he actually ends up in Major League Soccer? By the way, he's a free agent himself in the summer.
Cincinnati should not go after him. Cincinnati's in a worse position. They need to solidify the spine of their team. Yeah. And if you're going to use a DP spot, it needs to be on an elite defensive midfielder, a match-winning number 10. I don't know what they're doing at number 9. You have all those spots to fill in for a team like that. So even though they're on the top of the allocation, the one thing that fits for them with him is he's younger than the guys they've brought in. So like he's not done in a year. It's not CM DeYoung. So you can have a little bit of time.
If you didn't say it, I was going to say it.
The team that I see is Nashville. They're not a team that's going to spend big on DPs, which for the teams that are, they're not going to spend a DP spot on Yedlin, but he's a domestic and they've been trading away international spots to get allocation money because they didn't plan on using them. So you don't have to worry about that. And I think he upgrades a team that has their core, has their spine, and he can add attacking quality to the right back position, service for Cadiz, things like that, and as well a younger guy to kind of last for the next 4 or 5 years if he's willing to come back to MLS. So that's the team, the fit that I see. They're pretty far down on the allocation list. But again, I don't know that anyone else wants him. So I don't know that you have to give up that much to move up this list to pick him up.
DP spot for DeAndre Yedlin would be shocking to me. Like, is my gut instinct on that?
Wait, time out. Because we did this with the Molino conversation. You can't just speak in generalizations with that. DP could mean he's $1 over a threshold. It can mean whatever you want. It doesn't mean DeAndre Yedlin is making what Nico Ladero is making.
That's fair.
No, it's fine, but like using one of your three DP slots on
it's a finite resource even still. Like, wouldn't it be better to make it TAM, and that way you have this big kitty of TAM that you could then buy him down with?
As you can buy down at the same time. They're going to be able to say they have three DPs and then buy him down later.
Okay, maybe that's fair. But he's there if they want to.
Who's Nashville getting that actually should be a DP, right?
No, that's fair.
I don't know. They got a private jet. That is confirmed.
If I was Nashville, I would be more interested in upgrading that attack, specifically the number 10 position. And I think Alistair Johnston, given what his contract is and what he provided last year, I don't think the ROI is there to sort of recruit over him. The two places that make sense to me, if Harrison Offal is, if his legs are gone and he's not coming back, or even like you think you can't start him or can't get more than 1500 minutes, then yeah, if you're the Crew, your window is now. So Columbus would make a certain amount of sense from my point of view. And the other one, it's not an Eastern Conference, but like Seattle makes the most sense.
Yeah,
especially because like Kelvin Leerdam is,
you already have a TAM right back.
Well, he might not be coming back, right?
Well, that's what I'm saying. But you've been in your budget spending TAM money on a right back. It's not some big shocker to you to go out and do that.
Yeah, and it, exactly. And just like with Columbus, your window is now. Like Seattle's not trying to win in 2023. They're not trying to build guys up that they can sell, though I think they do eventually want to do that. They want to win championships this year and next year and the year after. And DeAndre Yedlin, as a right back, would, in theory, help them do that. So those are the two who make the most obvious sense to me.
Also, and if you're
he's not going to come back to MLS this year, so this is going to be
Look, that's what I was going to say. It's probably moot here. This is probably a situation where he can get more money elsewhere, and he will, because everything seems to be trending upward, at least in this immediate moment for him, and he is going to be on a free after this year with Newcastle. But you also have to consider the other side, which is not just like, hey, I'm FC Cincinnati, I want DeAndre Yedlin, I'm going to get him. There has to also be DeAndre Yedlin saying, I want to do that, which is why going to a contender makes so much more sense, and going home makes a lot of sense as well. Let us know what you think, Sounders fans, Cincy fans, anybody out there that's thinking, we need DeAndre Yedlin, put him on our roster. We're going to end this free agency segment here with a big congratulations to Luis Robles on a wonderful career. Always enjoyed chatting with him, watching him, seeing his career progress from a point where he thought he was going to hang it up and do real estate to being one of the best goalkeepers in Major League Soccer. I can't wait to see what's next for him as well.
He's a front office type of guy, right? Like you see him going back to Harrison and maybe getting a job somewhere with them.
There's an opening in Miami.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, he moved down there. And he's not a guy that you think, oh, I'll see him on the sidelines someday.
No.
In every way that he interacts with people and speaks and thinks about not just the game, but like the larger aspects of the business of sport, to me, he seems like somebody who's going to be, I don't know if people wear suits in this day and age anymore because we're all just sitting in our houses. I think he will be one of those guys. He'll be an executive down the line. So congratulations, Elise, on his career. Let's talk Inter Miami right now. Before we get to our chat with Greg Vanney, we did that on Wednesday. As I said, Diego Alonso, he knew. Somebody convinced him otherwise, but they also knew. Everybody knew. I don't know why they just didn't do this when they did it the first time, but now it is official. It is quote-unquote mutual that he is no longer the head coach. So they're pulling what amounts to, like, what would you compare this to? This is like an FC Cincinnati situation here. Your GM and Paul McDonough and your head coach after 1 year, deuces. I mean, Inter Miami, sorry.
Did Orlando fire their coach?
They did.
A year and a half. It was a year and a half.
Adrian Heath was gone.
Okay.
So, yeah, that didn't work out that well for them for Cincinnati. So, Inter Miami,
maybe there's
excuse
something
me.
In Florida state law where you have to do it that way. Because these are the only two MLS teams in Florida.
It's the ghosts in Fort Lauderdale. It's the ghosts of the old stadium just poking up out from underneath, being like, hey, the Fusion used to be here, all right? weird things happen, okay? David Beckham's Inter Miami, which is what they are now, let's be honest, have some big decisions to make. There are reports out there that David would like Phil Neville, or would like to at least talk to Phil Neville about it. That's why we have the Valencia scarf now on the scarf wall here. Just a quick time for Phil. We'll see how his Spanish got going when he was down there. What do we think? What's going to happen? Is it Patrick Vieira? Because like half of Toronto media seems to think it will be Vieira, and half of him say, hey, there's not even a contract out. I tend to believe the half that says that there's not a contract. Christian Jack, to me, probably the most sourced in that sense. And if I'm Patrick Vieira's agent, I'm like, everybody wants this dude.
Mm-hmm.
You better come in with your best offer. But they already talked to him, did it in Miami. So what's it going to be?
Who's
who should it be?
That wants Patrick Vieira.
Well, that's what I would say if I was the agent.
Right.
That was
but
me.
The jobs are starting to get taken.
Are they?
Well, just one, the Galaxy job. You still got the two.
In Atlanta. They still have three open jobs, right? You still have...
Oh, is Patrick Vieira going to go coach DC United?
No, but, like, potentially, right? Like, you pick up the call. You pick up
it's possible. If I'm his agent, it's definitely
possible. What I will say about where this puts Inter Miami in terms of their coaching situation, for Phil Neville, look, MLS, the goal is to be one of the best leagues in the world. And in order to get to that level, first we have to become one of the best meme leagues in the world. And I think we've made a lot of progress on that front. And bringing Phil Neville to Miami, well, Fort Lauderdale, I think that would put us maybe even like a top five meme league in the world, which is like really, really important to me. So fingers crossed for that one. But the more logical hiring would be Patrick Vieira. Given that there were already connections with them, you know, Taylor Twellman has reported that they were really, really close to hiring Patrick Vieira a year and a half ago as the inaugural head coach in Inter Miami, given that Patrick Vieira has had success in this league. And the other thing, which is why I think Vieira is maybe more of a candidate for Miami, even though we haven't heard a single link in the past 24 hours, well, not even in the past 4 hours since it became official with Diego Alonso. From everything I've heard, Vieira only wants to go to a situation where he will have power. Well, he will have decision-making power basically from the top to the bottom. Miami can kind of offer that right now because they have cleared out basically all of their decision-makers from the sideline and the front office. Vieira can go in there and be to Miami what Bruce Arena is to New England. Toronto, you don't get that. Bill Manning is there. Ollie Curtis is there. Those guys did not get to hire Greg Vanney, right? They had Greg Vanney for 3 years for in Ollie's case. He was not their guy. They are going to want to hire their guy who, this is going to sound, but like who they want to be able to control a little bit. And that is the way it's done in most front offices. That is not unique to Toronto. I don't think Vieira would be that guy. I think Vieira would demand too much control himself. So as it stands right now, if I were a betting man, I would put money on Patrick Vieira to Inter Miami, and I would expect a more modest hire in terms of global recognition from Toronto FC. And as for DC, because I know we just barely mentioned them, my money is still on Gonzalo Pineda. So,
speaking of Pineda, Brian Schmetzer, according to Ivis, who really has had a nice week when it comes to some of these news items, that Brian Schmetzer's got a new contract. They're working on that staff. If Pineda's not there, they might have to shuffle that a little bit. By the way, for Patrick Vieira, he spent a little time in Manchester, and he was like, nah, New York City, south of France, maybe Miami. He's just trying to live his life, man. I hope it happens.
I feel comfortable saying this. I'm pretty sure Phil Neville probably already owns a home in Florida. That's like the most British thing you could possibly do. Probably panhandle, but still. It's basically going home for him.
You think panhandle?
British people love panhandle. Yeah, they love the Tampa area.
Really? Had no idea. Did
it's
not
a golf situation.
That.
They don't like the waves. It's too much. It's too aggressive.
Gotcha. Okay. Just a nice little like easy dip in the
it's
water.
It's a giant lake. It's like the Mediterranean.
Maybe some links courses just to remind them of home. Anyway. Let's talk to Greg Vanney. Dave and I chatted with him on Wednesday right after his press conference, introducing him as the next head coach of the LA Galaxy. We'll take a listen and be right back. It's an AT&T 5G call to the field. We're talking to Greg Vanney, who, surprise, surprise, is the LA Galaxy manager. Nobody could have guessed this, Greg. It made perfect sense to all of us, and it seems like it made perfect sense to you. We've talked to you and Robin and so many other guys from those early Galaxy years about everything. I heard you talking about picking up glass off the training fields in your press conference that just ended. You're back in warm weather. You're still wearing the scarf. What does it mean to you to be the head coach of the LA Galaxy?
I'm really excited. Again, this is the club that gave me my opportunity to be a professional player. I learned a lot in those beginning years. You mentioned some of the names from the coach Lothar Osiander to Dan Kalischman, to Robin Fraser. These are the guys, Kobe Jones, who I'm sure I'll be seeing soon, Mauricio Cienfuegos. These are guys that were the epitome of this club then. I'm excited to be representing them and that legacy again in a different capacity. So I couldn't be more excited. I'm happy to be back in LA. A lot of familiar faces. There's a lot of things here that are that are familiar, that you know, that I look to look forward to taking in again. But you know, a lot. I'm really excited about the opportunity to be representing the Galaxy and the brand and Mr. Anschutz and their passions to get back on top. And so I look forward to this opportunity.
You mentioned the brand and getting back on top. I mean, that is the Galaxy brand. We were talking about this club on our last show, and I was thinking about that walk to the field, and you pass all the trophies that this club has won over time. And I sort of joked that they haven't been anywhere close to competing for those trophies. How big is this job in front of you? You said you like to build. You're a builder. How much do you have to build here?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of things here to work with to build. You know, there's a lot of infrastructure, things that are in place. But the most important thing is we have to build a certain culture for how we're going to work every single day. Those trophies don't win games anymore. You know, you can look at those trophies and you can walk by, but the opposition doesn't care anymore about those trophies. It's what are we doing every single day to be prepared and be ready for the match that's in front of us so that we can perform and execute on that day. And then we have to do that 34 times, and then we have to do that through the playoffs and every other event. So this is about it, reestablishing a culture, a work rate. Let the past go. It's there. We need to respect it, and we need to honor it. And the best way we can do that is by getting to work every single day and building our own legacy as a new team in this club, and not looking back at the legacy that exists. That's what is important. I was a part of that legacy, but for me, it's in the past. Now it is about today and what's in front of us. And that takes a certain mentality and a certain culture that when you come in here, you have to live up to that expectation. And I look forward to that. That's, you know, that's what I learned. And I learned it, you know, from, like I said, from Ziggy, even when I was at UCLA. When you stepped in and you played for UCLA, you had a certain standard that you had to live up to. That's where I first learned it. Then when I came to the Galaxy, we tried to set that standard as a new club. And they did for many years. Now we have to get back to it. That is what everybody has grown to expect in this league, is that the LA Galaxy is up at the top somewhere, pushing the level of other clubs and other teams. And that's the responsibility that we have. I couldn't look more forward to this opportunity.
So you mentioned building. You obviously built a winning culture and all the things you won in Toronto. Does this have to be different? Is this going to be different because the LA Galaxy have this past, or because it's a different area of the country, a different culture around the city, or can you kind of rebuild what you did?
Well, I think some things will translate directly. I think, you know, winning cultures and winning organizations have similarities. They're not polar opposites here. You know, culture and how you work in a winning way is consistent, whether you're talking about the Lakers or you're talking about the LA Galaxy or anybody else. There is consistencies in those cultures that exist that we have to get into place here. So there, even in Toronto, some of those things for sure we'll be able to put into place here. But this is a unique setting, and it has its own unique qualities that we have to quickly, as a staff and as a club, we have to add those into our formula to be successful here. And so I think that's part of what I love about this, is having to adapt a little bit, learn new things, but take some of the experiences that we've had before and apply them. We're going to have new characteristics of our players. We're going to have new personalities in our players. Getting to connect to them as quickly as possible to get the best out of each one of them so that they buy into what it is we're trying to do is one of those first steps. And so, you know, there are some things that will carry over, but there are definitely some things that are going to be unique to this team and to this club that we have to that we'll have to adapt to and add into this formula that can be successful for the Galaxy.
I don't want you to give away your secret sauce, but I do want to give away your secret sauce here, Greg. I think about Toronto and how you did that and the bloody big deal, and then Michael is such a key part of that building, and so many other guys. How do you build a culture? I hear it all the time. It's this buzzword in sports, in business, in life. Like, what do you do? How do you set that? What are actionable things that people at home listening can say, oh, I get that. I understand.
I think, a culture is set into place based on how you work every single day. You know, it can't be, a culture isn't set by your style of play. A culture isn't set by how you perform on the weekend. It's not. A culture is when you walk into this building and when you live your life, what is it that you're putting in the forefront, and how do you go to work every single day? And it takes multiple people. It takes everybody getting onto the same page. So when our players come into this building, they need to understand the expectations that they carry when they walk through, but also how are they going to work every single day? It's important for us to establish that and create that purpose for every single player who is here and everybody who is working around those players. And if we're all on the same page and we have a way of working that starts to develop a mentality of I'm showing up every day to be the best version of me, I'm trying to make the guy next to me better. When I'm at home or on social media and I'm putting out something, I'm showing my teammates that I'm ready to work hard and I'm ready to live up to my expectations. That starts to carry around and people start to buy in and it starts to spread within the group. And that's then a culture starts to develop. But it takes humility, it takes commitment, it takes discipline. And those are things and values that, you know, you hear that clubs or teams take on the persona of their coach or some of those things. It takes a little bit of time, but it's led and it's started by myself and our staff and the people around the players who set the expectations for the players. And then the players, you know, you got to make sure you have players who want to buy into that and drive that. You mentioned Michael Bradley. He is a standard setter for work every single day. This guy, he comes in, he's one of the first ones there. If he's not the first, he's one of the last ones out. He works hard every single day. It matters to him. It cares. Those are the types of guys that we're looking forward to add into this team. They are legacy players. They're not just guys who show up to win on the weekend, but they're legacy players and they care about the legacy that they leave behind them. And that's what we want to continue to build this roster with. I believe we have guys here who are like that. And I want to get to know those guys right away because they're going to be important as we establish that within this group.
Secretly, Weeby's wearing a Michael Bradley jersey under a sweatshirt.
So. I actually have every European jersey he ever wore, like right down there.
Thank you,
Jeff Bradley, for sending those over.
But we talk about the stars with Toronto and said a lot of that. For LA, it's always stars that we talk about, and Chicharito and Jonah Dos Santos are the two big ones. Have you talked to them at all yet? And looking from the outside coming in, what is it that you want to do with those two specifically to try and help build what you're talking about in LA?
I have not spoken to those two yet. That was on my agenda for once this announcement went out.
And, we got first.
And things are in place is to reach out to those guys and more players just to introduce myself and get things started, open up the dialogue. You know, I think that's one of the things that's important. It's the way I work with players is through dialogue, through collaboration. I want these players to feel like they're a part of this process and a big part. And so that's important to me, and I will reach out to those guys. I see Javier as a player who can bring a lot of experience, that professionalism, that standard setting type of guy who is the unique goal scorer around the world, who inside the box can do so many good things. We need to create a structure and a plan around him that allows him to excel and be the best version of himself. And obviously we want him to want to be that guy with us in addition to that. And I think he will, because I think the environment that we create will make a lot of sense to him. And I think he will appreciate it. And I think, you know, I hope that he will look forward to that. So, but that conversation will happen, but he's pivotal into the next steps of where we're headed. Same with Jonah. He's a guy who for me is a very, very good soccer player. He can do a lot of good things on the field. He's an engine room type of guy who can move you from the back to the front and side to side and can help us to keep possession. We want to be a team that has the ball. He can do a lot of those things. And so, again, another guy who I think is going to be important in terms of setting the standard and the expectations within this group. And it's important that I get connected to him and that he feels good about where we're going and his role in helping us to get there.
So you said in your presser, Greg, that you want to develop our principles of play and style of play. And I think about Chicharito a lot when you say that, because ultimately you got to score goals to win games. He's the guy being paid to do that. He did not perform at the level people expected last year. When you think about his game, and I'm assuming that you've watched tape or watched him a lot last year, how do you build something that best brings out his attributes? What does that style of play look like in your mind?
I think our team has to be a chance-creating team. You know, I think that's been the case for us in Toronto for a number of years. We create opportunities. We're always up there in the chance creation side. Javier needs it, in my opinion, he needs a team around him and a structure and some principles and things that function around him to put him in the best positions to try to score goals. He's a box striker who has qualities outside of the box. He can help your team and set up and all that kind of stuff. But at the end of the day, his bread and butter is to find those little gaps and windows inside the box to get unmarked, to create these little spaces where he can put things on goal. And so for us, it's about having a system and a style of play that is capable of getting us and the team to good spots that can put him into predictable areas for himself to get unmarked and to get good looks on goal. We've seen that with guys around the league. I mean, a guy like Bradley Wright Phillips, he's probably scored 110 goals inside the box, right? And it's about setting those types of players up in the best opportunities for them to be what they are, which is finishers. They're just pure finishers. And so he's got more qualities that he can bring to our team than that. But in order for him to put up numbers, we've got to help him in terms of putting him in the best spots to be the pure finisher that he's capable of being.
For about 5 years now, I think every January we sit in a warm place with you during Combine and we ask you, what does Toronto want to get better at? What do you want to change? And every year you say, I love having great wingers. I want to have guys who can take players 1v1. And almost every year it doesn't happen. Christian Pavone, though, and we have to talk about that, could be coming back, maybe coming back. He's the player you've been talking about. He is arguably the best 1v1 winger we've ever seen in Major League Soccer. What do you think about the potential of working with him and how it can fit into your fundamentals of how you see the game?
For me, that's one of our priorities is to find the best way and way that makes sense for our organization, ownership, everything, is to try to bring Christian back. If that doesn't work, it's a player like Christian, which there's not a ton of them out there, but somebody like him, you know, it's a huge quality in our league to have, is to have somebody who can come off the flanks and can eliminate people. It forces teams to have to bring players to the outside to support that defensive effort, brings people out of the middle, which then opens up the middle where ultimately things, you know, goals are scored, opportunities are created. So it's something that we've always talked about in Toronto, is having that guy, because the way we play and the style of play that we have and our principles will set up players for one-on-one situations constantly. And we talk about overloads and creating two versus ones. What we've never had really, except for Richie Larea did it from time to time, is that guy who can on a consistent basis eliminate that first defender, which brings other players out of the middle to help that. And so Christian is that guy, as you said, which is exciting. And he's another guy that I think within the system of what we're trying to do can really excel in what we would like to do along with Javier. So it's something that really fits together. As you said at the start of your question, one of the keys for me is that as a team, we've got to stop conceding goals, because you concede goals, you undermine anything that you're trying to do into the attack. And so collective team defending, continue to improve, getting the most out of the guys we have, continue to improve on those pieces is a really an important part of what the next step is about, because you can be as exciting as you want in attack, but you can't win every game 4-3 and 3-2. So that's a big next step for us as well.
Can I just ask you, Greg, about the transfer market and about your sort of influence on the decisions within? We know that you and Dennis will be in conjunction, but I just wonder in the discussions what you were asking for, what you wanted in that sense as far as your ability to really shape the team, because so many of the decisions that you guys made in Toronto were great decisions. And I assume when you make this jump that you're looking for a little bit more. If you're a builder, you want to have your hands in the dirt, so to speak. So how much room do you think you have to make changes, and where do you fit in sort of the decision hierarchy in your mind?
Yeah, I believe that, you know, these processes are collaborative. In order to get to the best results possible and the best players, it has to be collaborative. And Dennis has a fantastic network. Jovan is a hustler. He gets out there and he understands when I sit down and talk to him about the style of play and what I want to do, he understands it. He knows how to work those angles as well. So I think it's a collaborative process. In the end, you know, they're not going to put anybody on the team that I don't want on our team. I don't see fitting into what we're trying to do. I've laid out and will continue to lay out exactly the roles and the responsibilities and what we want each player to be able to do within the vision of what we're trying to do. They understand that. Now we're it's not the easiest moment right now, because you can't get out and really see players live as like you want to and meet players and really do the diligence that you would probably normally do in a market. But through our relationships, many of us have them, we can get a lot of good information. We can find really good players. So once we make those decisions, I think it's a collaborative process. But again, I think at the end of the day, it's clear that nobody there wants to put a player on this team that I don't see fitting into what it is we're trying to do and having a big impact on that.
I think we deserve a compliment that it took us this long to get to an academy question, because there's a chance on this show we would start with it. But I, I actually talked to Tibbez Vachenko a week ago, and he was talking about when you took over as academy director and then coach in Toronto, setting benchmarks for in 5, 6, 7 years, X amount of players in the first team coming from the academy, selling players, that whole set of goals. Do you have that in place for LA? Is it different because of the expectations for the Galaxy or for the Southern California talent? How are you thinking about integrating the academy top to bottom? And I think we all expect seeing more than what we've already seen from the LA Galaxy Academy.
Yeah, I think, you know, in the initial process of us talking about even this responsibility and this role for me, it's something that is important to me. You guys know that, and everybody around the league knows that I'm a guy that cares deeply about the academy and the young players and the development of the sport in North America, which is really in the academy space and the responsibility. But then the transition is now something that is important as well. And so I'm really excited about the talent they have here. I really like the structure that's in place because where they're set up and with the opportunity of the young players and the young talent to play in the USL Championship Division is really a test and a good stepping stone for these young players. I look at the group and there's some 03s and 02s and a couple 04s who I think have a ton of potential. And so, again, once we're all connected in terms of, again, style of play, principles of play, all of that kind of stuff, I think our system ideas are all very similar to what's already going on here. I think the youth group is and bringing some of those players along is a huge part of what we're trying to do. And I think there are a lot of guys that are already in. You see Efrain Alvarez is a fantastic player who has incredible vision. It's continued to nurture his game so that it makes sense and can be highly successful in what we're doing. Obviously, Julian Araujo is a young player who's come through this process and is excelling. And there will be another step for Julian. There will be another step for those guys. I think my goal is that those players understand that there is a pathway through the LA Galaxy and through the first team to help us to be successful. But it's okay to also dream to play in Champions League somewhere, to play for the biggest clubs in the world. We're okay with that. But we want our players to be proud to be here with the LA Galaxy and help our first team. And I'm here to help that process see its way through.
You got to call Chicharito. Otherwise, I'd talk to you about Efra and these guys in Araujo forever. But I have my W4 ball here, and I don't know if you know what this is. This is the ball that was pulled by Charlie Davies to set up El Tráfico, and MLS is back. We expected it. We got it. It's your El Tráfico debut coming this year. You didn't have it when you were there. What do you make of that in-city rivalry and going against Bob Bradley?
Look, I think it's fantastic to have two big organizations who are really trying to do things at the highest of level, being in the same city, a very short distance apart, having a rivalry game. I have the utmost respect for the group at LAFC and what they've accomplished in a very short period of time within this league. And obviously Bob is a tremendous coach. But I love the idea that two teams that are fighting for the top spot in MLS are in the same city. And there's a lot that can be built off of that rivalry and that competition. We both want to have the ball. We both want to be aggressive in how we play. Our styles are not so dissimilar. So there's a lot of really good things to like. We both are fierce competitors and intense. But I have a ton of respect for Bob and what they all have been able to accomplish. Our goal is we have to surpass that and get to the top. And there's a lot of work for us to do in that process. But I look forward to it. It's, you know, I was just a part of one of the greatest rivalries in the league, which is the Montreal-Toronto rivalry. I think to now be a part of this one is special, especially given my past at the Galaxy and the legacy that comes with that. To now be a part of something like this is I'm really looking forward to it and excited.
I figure they'll measure the 18-yard box better in this one than they did in the other one, right? Last one for you. We've talked about soccer in LA and what it means to you on the soccer side, but I wonder on the personal side, like to bring your family back there after a season that has been so difficult. I mean, a year that has been so difficult for all of us, but for, in particular, the teams in Canada and what you guys went through. Does it feel sort of settling on a personal side? What does it feel like to be back in LA with your family?
Yeah, you know, it will. It's a transition right now for us, for sure. It's the family's going to be in Toronto for a little while, try to finish the school year out, especially given the circumstances around us. Nothing seems to be so easy at the moment. And so it will be a process. you know, they're settled right now in Toronto, so everything is in place that they need. And so, and when I'm obsessive worker as it is, and so now it's a new project, I'm super obsessive. So for me to just be here kind of by myself obsessing about this for the next 5-6 months is probably good for everybody, to be fair, my wife and my kids included. But they're excited. They're really excited to, you know, bittersweet. Obviously, they've created a lot of relationships and people there as I did. But they're excited to get back, excited to be back in Southern California and to be a part of a club that they know meant so much to me and my playing career. For my boys are all three academy kids in Toronto, to now be a part of a club that gave me my opportunity and all that is something that's exciting for them as well. And my daughter's excited because she's going to go back to the gym and work with the people that she worked with before we left because she's in gymnastics. So my wife, there's a lot of friends that we had here. So there's a lot here to be excited about and for us to be together. You know, we love Toronto. I won't miss the snow and the cold winters, to be honest. I will trade that in for the beach and the sun. But we're excited. We're really excited about this opportunity and next phase of this journey, right? This game is a journey that takes us in many, many different directions, and we're excited about this one.
All right, Greg Vanney, new head coach of the LA Galaxy. As we all predicted, glad to see it happen, Greg. Glad to see you there. Thank you so much for your time. We'll chat real soon, okay?
All right, guys. Take care.
Greg Vanney, still wearing a scarf in the beautiful weather in LA. Some things just never change, unless you're watching on YouTube. You couldn't see that, but now you know. So the conversation I want to have here kind of revolves around the transfer window and now what they become under Greg Vanney and the continuation of Dennis DeCloso's time in LA. There's the academy, but then there's also the flip side of this, which is that they're LA Galaxy and they're both expected to sign big players and also big players want to play for them because of history, because of LA. So how would you approach it? Dave and I kind of argued about this off air, Doyle, so I'd be curious what your thoughts are as far as roster construction and the future of the Galaxy under Greg Vanney.
How many of those big players who have really wanted to play for LA have been good over the past half decade?
Robbie Keane would be one. David Beckham became one.
They signed Robbie Keane a decade ago. I've said over the last half decade.
Ashley Cole was good for them.
He was pretty good. He was okay. Yeah. Ashley Cole, obviously Zlatan took a pay cut, but he was coming off an injury and is sort of a singular type of player. You can't replicate that.
All of a sudden, Daniel Sturridge trained at StubHub a lot.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, Dreamy got hurt, doesn't totally fit into this because he's younger. And I think Insua was fine this year. I would say you're not signing those guys to be the core of your team, and the rosters they all played on were bad.
I'm saying don't even think of it like that is what I'm saying. Don't even think of it like that. If you want the blueprint for how to build a winning team in this league, you look up the street to LAFC, you look all the way up the I-5 to Seattle, or you look to what Columbus did, or you look to what Greg Vanney was a part of for half a decade in Toronto. And I think it's going to be his job to sort of find the right fit for LA. And that can include signing players like Chicharito.
It already does.
Yeah. Right. But like the next Chicharito, right? Like whoever that happens to be. What's that?
For them, it always will.
But does it have to?
Club. I think so. I think it's a part of the club, whether it's from the ownership,
It can't be the priority. It can't be the priority. The priority has to be to build a stable and functional team. They have every asset in terms of player acquisition that every other team in the league does. They have to be smarter about using them. They have what should be the most talent rich area in North America outside of like Guadalajara or Mexico City to recruit from in terms of homegrowns. They have to do a much better job of leveraging that. And then what happens between the lines? Like Greg Vanney has to do a better job than has been done over the past 6 years in Carson. Like it's just one after another. Once you get that stuff right, then you could worry about whichever superstar happens to land, you know, fall in your lap next. Like the Galaxy have built their rosters over the past 6 years has been bass backwards. It really has.
So the question though is, and the Galaxy have been terrible, is though, do we have time to talk about the academy now? Is an idea for in Greg Vanney's mind, is he talking to Dennis DeCloso now? at this moment in 2021 about how he's getting players in through the academy, which players are going to be a difference, because does that equal the starting to put together competitive teams and winning?
To me, here's my initial thought on that. Just in the terms of time it takes and the guys that they've brought through and the impact they've got from them, to me, it's focus on Araujo and Efra right now. Evaluate the other guys. See if you can start to blood them. But number one, and Greg talked about it in the interview, and he's talked about it repeatedly, and he talked about it in Toronto too, is that you got to get the first team culture and results, yes, but culture right, so that when you do bring those guys in and that pathway starts to pay dividends, they're coming into situations where they can be successful and they fit in the right way and they're ready.
So, so Greg Vanney, I think, took over Toronto.
So that may take time. That might be 2 years. That, you know, like
2 years. I think we're talking like 5 or 6 years is my point.
Well, I'm saying for the first sort of like wave of that to work out.
Sorry, if Oscar Pareja could do it in less than a year in Orlando.
No,
we're talking about the academy.
But Oscar Pareja hasn't built out an academy and has a pipeline of bringing those players through. That's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
I think that's a 6-7 year plan for Vanney to do it at a high level consistently, like Dallas is doing and like we hope Philly is about to do.
I'm just saying that in 2 years, you want to see the first sort of like drops coming from the pipe, right? Like you want to start seeing signs that there are players or there is a culture that can integrate and help those players improve.
2 years is way too long. Like if Julian Araujo's not a starter this year, I'm going to lose it.
Well, yeah. No. I count those guys are outside of it for me. Araujo and Efra are in the first team. His job right now with those two, okay, fine. That too, I said. Like those two you have to elevate. Araujo needs to be an international caliber player. He should probably be a guy that you're looking to like get a multi-million dollar transfer for down the line. He should be that good. And Efra should be a guy you're saying, oh yeah, that potential. That's now real in a somewhat consistent basis because it still hasn't been. Either way, if we don't move on right now, we're not going to get the 5 minutes for the mailbag. And I made a promise to produce an Anders, and we've got to fulfill on that promise. But first, explain the national team January camp to me, Doyle. They got 5 competitions in 2021, Nations League, Gold Cup, World Cup qualifying, Olympic qualifying, and then you hope the Olympics. So what's going on with Greg and the boys?
Well, my reading of this is, first of all, it's 2 different rosters. It's a very limited senior roster. I think it's just 12 guys who are 24 and over, and the significance of 24 is those are the guys who are too old to go to Olympic qualifying. And then there's a 23 and under camp, which is very large and is like purely an Olympic qualifying camp, purely and obviously. The understanding here is that the Olympic qualifying and the Olympics themselves, they are youth national team tournaments. And FIFA does not compel clubs to release players for youth tournaments. European clubs have no interest or no reason to release the likes of Christian Pulisic, Tyler Adams, Weston McKennie, Gio Reyna, Serginho Dest, Anthony, like all of these guys are young enough to be at Olympic qualifying. None of them will be there. So first and foremost, Greg Berhalter is taking these 23 players, well, it's more than 23 players, but taking a bunch of players primarily from MLS because MLS clubs do tend to release their players for international tournaments at age group levels and is like, okay, a couple of guys from last month, Efra Alvarez, Kyle Duncan, weren't up to snuff, didn't make it. They didn't make this camp. From this group, it's going to be a bloodbath to figure out who is going to be there for Olympic qualifying, which is slated to take place about 2.5 months from now. But obviously that is, you know, not written in pen, given that it's 2020 and we're still in the midst of a pandemic.
It's 2021, but
2021, right. Still 2020 in so many ways, Weeby. So this is what you want, right? You want to see depth throughout the player pool. We still have, like, Josh Sargent's not going to be there. Nico Gioacchini, who had a really good debut for the U.S., he's not going to be there. We still have Jeremy Abobase and Daryl Dike. Ayo Akinola, he's not going to be there. He's with Canada. He's thinking about maybe playing for Canada. We still have guys like Jesus Ferreira. So this is really, to me, an example of the depth that has been created at the age group level for the U.S. national team over the past 4 years. We did not have that in 2018. We have that now in 2021. It is a big part of why I think that we didn't qualify for the 2018 World Cup. It is a big part of why I think we will not just qualify, but be very good for 2022 and 2026. As for the full national team camp, again, guys have been cut. Daniel Lovitz isn't there. Will Trapp isn't there. Michael Bradley isn't there. Those are guys who were really part of the national team in 2019 under Greg Berhalter. They didn't play well enough. They just didn't do it. Chase Gasper was really good in MLS this past year. Wasn't quite good enough to push in. At this point, there should be no interest in expanding the roster anymore because you know who the core of players are. You know that the younger guys, whether it's the ones in Europe or here in the U.S., have generally outperformed the holdovers, and that is the decision that Greg Berhalter seems to have made with this camp. So I think it's very telling in a lot of ways. First, that decisions have been made about personnel, and second, that the Olympics is really a priority. If it wasn't a priority, then players like Jackson Ewell, who is with the U23s, he would be with the senior team instead. But for this camp, he is with the U23s. So it's what I wanted to see, and I'm happy that I'm seeing it this month.
There's the buzzer right there. We have 5 minutes left. And begin 401-206-0MLS, extra time at MLSsoccer.com. We got some resolution suggestions that we saved for the mailbag. The first one comes from Taylor Wimberly. A mini 10 to 15 minute intensive analysis segment a week featuring a different and new team. We have talked about this in the past. I think it is a very good idea. We always have people begging us for something deeper or saying, you don't talk about my team with enough regularity or enough sort of comprehensiveness. So I think we should do this, and I think we should make it communal. I think we should take suggestions each week. And, of course, once the team is done, yeah, you mark them off the list, and then you move on to, you know, you have 26 left to talk about.
Go by allocation order, right? And if a team trades, then we have to move them up.
What mechanisms do we have? That's the question. But I think we should do it. So on Thursdays, let's say, we will take suggestions, and then we will decide on the team based on the game and who we haven't talked about, and then put a line through the ones that we have. My instinct would be that we all watch it together, of course, the three of us and Charlie and whoever else, Kaylin, whoever's involved here, so that we all have seen the same game and can talk about the same thing in totality, hopefully, but that we also open it up and like live tweet it or something, or have producer Anders live tweet it with us on the Extra Time handle so that the entire Extra Time base is thinking about it. So when we talk about it, it's familiar to everybody. And then it's a question of Monday or Thursday. Yeah. What do you think?
I vote Thursday.
For the discussion.
Yeah, because I think Mondays, listen, there's 27 teams in the league this year. Is that right?
Yes.
Did I get that number right? Okay. Yeah. I don't know how much extra like people are like, oh, you don't talk about our team enough. We did a show where we tried to talk about everyone for 2 minutes, and there's 27 teams in this league. There's nothing we can really do about it to an extent, and there's going to be more. So then we got to talk about Guardado to Charlotte. Then you got to talk about Sacramento. Then you got to talk about St. Louis, all that stuff. So, yeah, I think Thursdays has a little more space to me.
Yeah, I'm down for that. So 10 to 15 on Thursdays, we'll choose a team, we'll watch their game for the weekend, or maybe midweek. So midweek might deliver some easy wins for us on that front as well. If you have any ideas there, let us know. Another one from MLS Gone Wild. That's a competing podcast out there about Major League Soccer. They get some great guests, though, so check them out if you want to. They say, feature small MLS-focused podcasts on the show with the kissy face. So any podcast other, this is your moment, MLS Gone Wild. Yeah. We're not doing it again. This is your moment. We just promoed you. If you listen to, and I'm sure that you do out there, listen to podcasts about this league, whether it's team-focused or league-focused or whatever it might be that you really like, once a week in the mailbag, we'll do it on Thursdays, I think. Send us your pitch, like your elevator pitch for why people should listen to that show. I think, as I think about, as I do from time to time here, Daryl Grove and the Total Soccer Show and what he represented, I think this is an opportunity to sort of represent what Daryl often did, which is inclusion and sort of sharing the stage and really giving other people shine and saying, they, over there, not me, doing a great job. You should check them out. So let us know what you listen to, what you like about it, and why other people should too. All right, here's the regular mailbag section that we have. Dave, take it away.
Eric Olson in Orlando, Florida says, I've been watching MLS since mid-2000s. It's been exciting to watch it grow in such a short time from a relatively niche league, an old football and baseball stadium, to the one we have now. I remember tuning into MLS Live back in the day and spending the first couple minutes every game trying to divine if this local station knows how to put the home team first on the scoreboard and whatnot. But now things have become so much better, but get ready for it. It's time to list records as win, draw, loss instead of win, loss, draw. Imagine no more numbering, no more wondering which number is which on the broadcast. I'm sure you guys can pull some strings at MLS HQ. Thank you. I look forward to our glorious standardized future. In your face, guys.
Yeah, this is the sort of pedantic stuff that both excites me and bores me.
I can't believe that's an email that we chose to read on this show.
I like it. I like it. Eric, don't take this the wrong way, man, but I like that you're thinking in this sort of detail. I do agree that consistency is important and must be had because I always have to go check when I'm looking at different websites and be like, okay, how do they do it? So I would love to see that be consistent. I appreciate your attention to detail, man.
It's been win-loss draw for more than a decade, and you're talking about consistency. So
yeah, but that's
changing it would be consistency for your
no point. Don't change it. I'm saying everybody has to do it the same because that's the problem. What it is on the MLS standings is not always what you see on every single broadcast or in every single place. So everybody get behind win, loss, draw, or everybody get behind win, draw, loss. I don't care which one it is. We just got to communicate it. What about that Paul from Houston one?
I was going to skip that one, but clearly you want to read it. So read it.
All right, Paul from Houston. We talked about the Dynamo, and I was like, they should go, or no, you said, Dave, they should go get a recognizable name. Somehow I got it. He says, Weeby, Dynamo fans already know who we are, and that is cheap. So, yeah, that's the rebuttal.
I think
if
it's
because
you
rebutted
to me and said, it's never going to happen. And he's saying, we know that.
Oh, okay. Got it.
It was a New Year's resolution. My resolution was to surf. I'm never going to surf. That's part of it. It's kind of like a hope and a dream. Let's finish with this one. Hank in Salt Lake City, who says, why every time I watch a broadcast do commentators say zonal marking is wrong and a mistake, and yet most teams seem to use it for segments of games?
Because zonal marking is better than straight up man marking and has been for, 35 years. If you're looking at the place where commentators most often complain about it is on corner kicks. The best defensive teams in the world on set pieces, but specifically on corners, use a mix of man and zonal principles. Sometimes you have a little guy matched up against one of the opponent's best players in the air. Not because you want him to win the header, because you want him to bump him so that he can't really get his feet under him and really get up in the air and attack the ball. And then you're betting on your best defensive players in the air to win those headers on corner kicks. It is not good commentary when color analysts complain about zonal marking on corner kicks. Because it just, if you look at the numbers throughout the world for the past 35 years, a mix of zone and man marking on corner kicks is always the best way to defend.
It's recency bias, yeah? Because when they're talking about it, it's almost always after a goal has been scored and they're looking at that replay and saying, oh, well, there was zonal marking there, so that's at fault.
No, it's recency bias and it's nostalgia. Well, when I was a kid in Old Blighty, I wasn't taught zonal marking. I was taught, and
you got to be a lad and take another lad and win your duel.
Exactly. So, commentators, some of them are very good.
Lad versus lad is my new way of referring to man marking on corner kicks. It's just a bunch of lads in the box. Okay, all right, that's it for us. Did
Andrew,
we hit 5 minutes on?
Very excited about Phil Neville taking over.
He has property in Florida, or so I've heard. So yeah, you got a nice place to decamp and relax if things go a little bit south for Inter Miami. Anders says we've met our obligation, and it's a privilege to meet that obligation. 401-206-0MLS, extra time at MLSsoccer.com. Hit us up. It's been a fun show. 2021 is off and rolling, and that means things in different ways. We'll see you on Monday, everybody. Have a great weekend.